This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to Speed City with John Massengill, Les Kaiser, and Jonathan Green. It's the fastest hour on the radio. Speed City.
Good evening, gearheads. Welcome to Speed City. This is John Massengale sitting in the studio in Austin, Texas, and I'm joined by my co-host Les Kaiser via Zoom. Good evening, Mr. Kaiser. How are you?
Hey, doing good. A little bit of sun on the forehead today. Do I have a mask pattern?
Yeah, that's right. You definitely look a little sun. I got some sun out at COTA today as well. So, yeah, we spent the day at Circuit of the Americas. They had Trans Am and SVRA out there. Man, that was very fun to go just through the parking lot out at COTA today with all the cool classics out there.
Absolutely. Great time. Great to see this combination together. And gosh, great to be out on the racetrack again.
Well, let me run down what we're going to talk about on the show today. Jonathan Green was out at COTA. He was doing some work for Trans Am and SVRA on the microphones out there.
Oh, mayhem.
As usual, causing mayhem. But he's going to join us here in a few minutes. He's probably just now getting home, and he's going to join us in a minute via Zoom. But we are going to talk a little bit about Trans Am and SVRA at COTA. But we're also going to talk Formula One. There's a new race that's been announced for next year at Saudi Arabia. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk a little NASCAR, Jimmy Johnson's final race. And, of course, the championship wrapping up today, just a few minutes ago, really. And there's been some other news. The 2021 MotoGP calendar announced with COTA's slot. And we got some other F1 stories and some other stuff that we're going to talk about. But, Les, I think I want to start with our trip out to COTA today. And why don't you just talk a little bit about what all you saw, what you did, and then kind of lead into the interview you got out there today.
Absolutely. So, it's a great combination of races. It's the Trans Am, which is kind of the modern muscle cars and other cars that are out there. Everything from Audi R8s to, the modern Challenger is out there. Just everything you see on the street and on the showroom floor nowadays. Out there in race trim and running hard. Great to see those classes together, having fantastic competition. One of the things that I've enjoyed about the Trans Am series, watching it growing up, is it's ever evolving. New names and veteran names are in there all the time. You never know if you're going to see the next new kid coming up or you're going to see a veteran there. And to see those combined on the track, having a lot of fun there and really performing well. And, you know, this is where you can still get the walls to rattle with those engines too. And so it's a fun racing crowd to see.
Yeah, the top class in Trans Am, they like to claim they got more horsepower than NASCAR in the top class, in the TA class.
Absolutely. It is there's some serious horsepower out there, a lot of downforce in these street-shaped cars, and it's a lot of fun. I like seeing the mix of, cars, today wrapped up with Boris Said and the Mopar, the Challenger there. and then right behind him is a Mustang. And like I said, quite a mix of cars out on course.
Now, does the Challenger have the headroom that you need if you're Boris Said with the Afro and the special helmet that you have for that Afro?
That guy seemed to figure out a way to get in and out. And, I will say I always liked looking at those cars. And one of the things that it has that I thought was cool was, they've got the little flip up panel to let somebody as big as Boris Said fit through that and get into the car.
Man, so, How tall is Boris? I think he's about my height. Isn't he like 6'2 or so?
He was leaning against the car, and he was still taller than me by a couple inches. So, yeah, I think you two are in the same area.
And he's been racing a while, man. I put in my show notes, veteran race driver, and that's kind of an understatement. I think he's in his late 50s, isn't he?
Boris is actually, he and I are within about 3 or 4 months of each other. I do recall from the past. And, you know, he has been racing so many different classes. You know, I mentioned, you'll hear it in the interview later, he's actually raced quite a few brands. We've seen him in Chevrolet Corvettes. We've seen him in Camaros. We've seen him in BMWs and a whole host of others going back through history. He's one of those that always performs well and is pulled in. You know, he's one of those Chuck Norris drivers. He pulls in and gets the job done in whatever you put him in.
I like that, the Chuck Norris style. Well, why don't we go ahead and play this interview that you did with Boris Said here just, a couple hours ago. So let's hear from Boris Said.
All righty, folks. I start this off with saying we're the same age. Old guys rule. You ruled all day. You had to muscle. You had to flex. Tell us about this battle you had running.
I mean, we had a really good battle with Ernie. I mean, he's tough. I mean, we were running like qualifying laps all in the beginning, burning our tires off. But Poncho Weaver builds a great car. You know, Techniques, High Speed Prototypes, a great sponsor. You know, these are the guys that are building the car tomorrow for NASCAR that's coming out in 22. And it's great to have him on board. And we just got a really good team. I mean, he's a one-man band. Our transmission guy, Andrews, he came and helped, brought his family. It was a team effort this weekend. So it's just a lot of fun. And I'm chasing Greg Pickett, who's my hero. You know, this is my fourth win in 4 decades. So I've won a race in 4 different decades. So I think I got to go 2 more decades to catch up to him.
We've seen you in quite a few flavors of cars. You know, here you are in Mopar. I'm not arguing about a Mopar. Yeah. I haven't had them myself. So. This is just an awesome combination of cars we've seen. You're still on the track. You're still showing. Old guys rule. Yeah, congrats, yeah. Buddy.
58 years old. I'm still standing on the gas.
There you go.
I love the sound that we get out when we're doing recordings at a circuit. I love that. But Boris is great, isn't he?
He's always fun and, you know, always chatty. And it's fun, especially if you get the opportunity to speak to him off the recorder or the camera. He's always got some fun stories. He's got some things that probably wouldn't go public very well. But great stories. I don't know. You and Jonathan took him out to dinner one Christmas holiday, and he tried to join another party, was it?
That's right. I forgot about that. We went to a really nice Fonda San Miguel, real nice restaurant in central Austin. And he and the boys, I think it was Turner Motorsports back then. This was probably got 13, 14, maybe 15, but I forgot about that. Yeah, he tried to, I think it was after a couple of margaritas, he tried to join the table of ladies next door to the second table over. He's fun, though, isn't he?
He is. He's always, like I said, a lot of fun, very approachable. If you're ever out in the paddock, which is a big selling point to the Trans Am Series as a spectator. Nationally, the crowds weren't nearly as big, but thanks for everybody that was there. Everybody was very respectful. Social distancing, masks were everywhere. And, you know, I think we're all just ready to get out. And if it means we got to stay a little distance away from everybody, that was all right. Even during that interview, I've got a fair amount of space between Boris and I, and we're just having a good time and trying to do some things that feel normal for us.
Yeah, it was a pretty good crowd, but you're right. I never felt unsafe. Everybody was keeping their distance. And but, you know, let's let Jonathan catch us up on Trans Am since he was doing all that today. But I want to talk about SVRA that was going on out there because, man, there were some awesome cars. I mean, you couldn't and not only in the paddock and in both the paddocks, but out in the parking lot, out in Lot A and everywhere around. And you couldn't walk 10 feet without getting sucked into another car. What was that Lotus Cortina you were looking at? That thing, I heard that, by the way, right after we were over there talking to them. We were walking away, and I heard that car come by, and it sounded great. I know it's a little four-cylinder, but, man, it sounded hot.
The Lotus Cortina is was a Ford / Lotus combined effort, primarily seen over in Europe. I knew some folks here stateside that had a Cortina. We've still got a couple of those around town that I see. Great little four-cylinder, potent as the generation of Lotus was, in a little sedan. Looks kind of, you know, to put it relative to something local, remember back into the 70s when you saw Toyota Corollas that were very boxy, very much the same thing, had the round tail lights divided in three spots on that tail light. That was a great friend of the show. If you recall, we highlighted that John Weinberger, owner of Continental Autos in Chicago. It's six different dealerships there in the Chicago area, especially the Ferrari dealership. His widow and friend of the show, Lisa Weinberger, got back in the car today and raced and did great. And it was so awesome to see her back on the track and getting back into things. Great little car, though.
Yeah, that was. I mean, I went with my son, as you know. We got sucked into, you know, he loves the, lots of cars, but he's into some of the Japanese racers, and we got sucked into some of the Datsun, the B210s, but everything was out there. I mean, everything from late model stuff, like I saw lots of late model Vipers and Corvettes, of course, and Mustangs and Camaros, but there was like I saw a what was that? Oh, it was a Lotus Esprit out there. And I mean, you could go on and on, but it was really a fun time out at COTA today. And SVRA is such a good event. It's such a great family event too.
You mentioned the Datsuns, and yes, Datsun, pre-Nissan era for us stateside. The Peter Brock engineering, or pre-Peter Brock engines, that there were three of the probably clones of that generation of Datsun out there with the 210s and the Z cars and that pack. And I absolutely love that. That's one of those that, you know, I recall in the late 60s, early 70s, watching the white pattern with the red and blue stripes, you know, maybe a red hood on the car. But the BRE team with the Datsun was absolutely phenomenal. And they are, it's just very nostalgic for me to go into the paddock. Another great selling point of SVRA is that full access to the paddock. Get up close and look at the history that's raced.
Yeah, full access is an understatement. You just walk into any garage you want and strike up a conversation with whoever's car you got right in front of you. But, hey, we need to take a break. But when we come back, we're going to take this break because Jonathan Green has joined us, and we're going to all catch our breath before Jonathan fires up and tell us what he was doing out of COTA today. You're listening to Speed City. We're live in Austin, Texas, back after these messages.
As a rider, you know what you like. The power, the feel, the ride. When it comes to gear, you know what keeps you safe. Ducati Austin provides riders with the finest in day and easy leathers, the best the market offers. Visit Ducati Austin on Breaker Lane just east of I-35 and throw your leg over the most iconic sports bike ever built. Ducati. Even take it for a test ride or see what's been described as art on wheels from MV Agusta. You know what you like. See it at Ducati Austin. Online at DucatiAustin.com.
At Circle Brewing, the belief is less is more when it comes to brewing a better beer. You won't find any chemicals or additives, only water, malt, hops, and yeast, and absolutely nothing else. Just simple ingredients and outstanding taste. It's German purity with Texas ingenuity. Find the brews on tap all over town, in your favorite store, or drop by the tap room at 2340 West Breaker Lane, open Thursday and Friday nights and weekends. Log on to CircleBrewing.com. Circle Brewing Company. Born, bred, and brewed in Texas.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Talk 1370, the right choice.
Yeah. Hello to everyone. This is Gunther Steiner. This is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, welcome back to the show. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call. Tell us what you want to hear about tonight. 512-643-LIVE, 512-643-5483. And we got Jonathan Green, who just got back from Circuit of the Americas, calling some of the Trans Am racing out there. Welcome back, Jonathan.
Thank you very much. Yeah, long weekend. We're on at 5 to 8 this morning. We had a brief lunch break, and we were calling all the group races in SVRA, Miata MX-5 Cup, and, of course, Trans Am.
Awesome. And we got to be out there today and hear some of those Trans Am cars blasting around the circuit. Do they really have more horsepower than a NASCAR Cup car?
That's a good question. Well, you know, there's not a lot of difference, honestly. We race a couple of times a year at Mid-Ohio and Road America with NASCAR in the Xfinity Championship. In fact, a lot of the drivers, the young drivers like Christopher Bell and a few others, will join us to get extra practice on track. And frankly, the only big difference is, honestly, is that we have the wings, the tiny wings at the back. So we've got more aerodynamics than a NASCAR. But there really isn't a lot of difference. And we heard sort of through the grapevine today that a lot of NASCAR guys were watching before Phoenix because they were just sort of tuning in to see what it would be like to drive a stock car around the Circuit of the Americas and also get an idea of the, you know, the sort of times that they were putting down. And
yeah, what were the lap times?
Looking forward to that. Well, we're talking 2:11 in the TA class and probably not far off that in TA2, not better than that.
I bet you NASCAR is going to be faster than that.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
I'm looking excited to. Jonathan, you started to comment there about the different folks that are there. I absolutely love the mix of a new, young, and up and coming crowd and veterans such as Boris that we see there, mixing it up. And you know, the comment I made to Boris is, he's my age, and old guys can still roll, and he does it. And he is out there muscling around against younger drivers and. But lasting the entire race.
And the truth is, you know, Boris said is long retired. You know, he had a distinguished NASCAR career and a sports car career, and he doesn't race anything else but Trans Am. And he's pretty much gets two or three races a year. Paul Tracy raced again today. And of course, now he's doing commentary. And I think Tansen Bell and Lee Diffie have probably pushed him into doing some more racing. And he's like, well, if I'm going to race, I'm going to race Trans Am. And just like Boris, just like Paul Tracy, they all say they love Trans Am for the simplicity that it's just pure racing, going through that gearbox, hearing it, feeling it, no add-ons, no extras, no ABS, no traction control. Just pure racing.
Well, Boris said
we were talking, and I started thinking through. I was like, oh, well, no, he raced this, and he raced that, and he raced this. And then I'm starting to get confused. So Boris said, we joked about him being the Chuck Norris of racing. Listen to this. NASCAR, American Le Mans Series, V8 Supercars. You're racing the X Games, SCCA National Championship, 24-Hour Le Mans, Monster Energy Cup Series, Daytona 500, Xfinity, Craftsman Truck. If you need to go to commercial, go ahead. Craftsman Truck Series, Busch North Series, Winston West Series, ARCA, and Supercars again, and WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. How
and
is
guess
that?
What? And guess what? That's unbelievable. And guess what? His father raced Formula One.
Well, that's why he's only racing Trans Am, because he's raced everything else. This is all that's left.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, and he's settled on the best.
Yeah, it was fun out there today.
What did you guys think of the show? Because it's important to me to report back to Tony Perella, my boss, who is responsible for all 360 cars involved today. We had 59 Trans Am cars, and we had over 350 SVRA cars, as well as a Hagerty Cars and Coffee. Cars and Coffee. That's it. You can tell I've been talking for a while. Cars and Coffee. And we also had a Corvette show as well. So we really did have a bumper crowd, one of the biggest events in U.S. vintage racing.
Well, I thought I didn't get out there till Sunday about noon. And I know actually some of the people are already starting to pack up and go. Before you came on, I was just talking about, well, I love to see all the cars, but the Trans Am side of it, I love the sound of those Trans Am cars.
That's right.
And I didn't really get to sit and watch racing. I just had about 2 hours out there. So, I mean, it was great, but I will give you a report on my neighbor because he went out there with his two young boys, and I'll let you know what he says because he was out there all day today, so I'll find out, you know, he's new to racing, so we'll see what he says about it too.
And it's great for kids because they're allowed to touch the cars, and in fact, the drivers will literally pick the kids up and place them in the car, which they get a big thrill out of. And I remember that's what got me when I was 3 or 4 years old. My dad took me to Brown's Hatch, and, you know, I got shown around. I got the privileged seat because my uncle was racing. But, you know, it really does change a little kid, whether a little boy or a little girl. And also, we had, talking of girls, Michelle Abate won in the West Coast Championship today and could win the West Coast Championship. So we've got girl power going strong. And also Natalie Decker also raced in the West Coast. So Trans Am is going from strength to strength despite COVID.
That's awesome. Well, hey, guys, I want to shift gears a little bit. And we've got our NASCAR reporter with us tonight, our British NASCAR reporter. Jonathan, I know you were on the air today, but I don't know. I'm sure you saw that Chase Elliott won the 2020 NASCAR Cup Series title at Phoenix Raceway. And I just want to get your take on that and also talk about Jimmy Johnson a little bit, too.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Jimmy is the bigger story in many ways, but it's kind of neat that on the day that Jimmy hangs up his mantle as the greatest driver of all time in NASCAR, 7 titles in the number 48. And now we'll turn to be Scott Dixon's teammate in Indy, which is so exciting for American racing. But Chase Elliott actually squeaked through a little bit. It was touch and go whether he'd come through to actually get to the final four. But to be fair, Chase Elliott has had a superb season, and I'm really pleased for him. And of course, he carries on the Elliott tradition. We had Bill Elliott racing in Trans Am this time last year at Mid-Ohio. So, you know, just like the Earnhardts, the Elliotts are a NASCAR family through and through. And Chase is just basically following in his father's footsteps. And I'm delighted for him because that is, I wouldn't say it's a turn up because he's been competitive all year. But I don't think anybody expected him to come home with the big one.
Yeah, I was, I don't know. I'm just, now that we've got NASCAR coming to COTA next year, I'm just really excited to talk about it more and more and follow it. But yeah, that Jimmy Johnson going to IndyCar, that's going to be a blast too. And I was joking about, Jonathan, I was joking, but I wasn't joking about you covering NASCAR because you do cover NASCAR, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Yes, I do. I do every week. I do Motorsport Mondial, which you can now listen to on Speed City, I may add. So we'll give you some more information when we get our ducks in a row, but we have a new show, Motorsport Mondial, which we'll be putting out as a podcast, and it's basically a weekly world motorsport show, and it basically takes on the world of motorsport and NASCAR, IndyCar, Formula One, you name it. It's in the show, and bikes too, and I'm very proud to be part of that. It's a worldwide show with 900 million viewers each week, and I do the NASCAR show. I do the NASCAR coverage for them. And I've been delighted because I'm learning a lot about the history and about NASCAR and really enjoying it. And I'm delighted that they're coming in May. And NASCAR's changing too. NASCAR is modding up, no question about it. You know, it's been through a couple of rough years in the last few years in terms of attendance and in terms of sort of notoriety. And I think it's about to hit another big wave because maybe Jimmy's going, but now the youngsters are coming through. Michael Jordan is forming a team next year with Bubba Wallace. There's lots of young kids coming through. You know, Suarez, Larson has now got reinstated. You remember he got fired for some racial slurs earlier in the season on NASCAR racing.
Yeah.
He's back for next year. And there's a few driver swaps and changes. But the big news is Michael Jordan is stepping into NASCAR, and that is going to change the face of NASCAR forever.
Yeah, I mean, it's really a pretty significant change going on with Bubba Wallace and all the Black Lives Matter and everything, and NASCAR coming out immediately and, banning the Confederate flag. So they've gone through a bunch of changes and trying to grow their audience and modernize. So we'll see how all that plays out.
And by the way, Steve Phelps is also, you know, this is a big move, taking NASCAR to COTA to do another road race. And like I said, we were aware that a lot of people were tuning in from NASCAR today before the Phoenix race, because this was their first chance to see stock cars on the Circuit of the Americas. And there's often been a complaint amongst NASCAR fans over the last few years that a Watkins Glen or any road course, iconic or not, should be included in the chase. And it hasn't happened yet, but you did notice that the Roval at Charlotte came in to the chase this year. Unfortunately, it was pretty much rained out. Now with COTA coming in May, if it's successful and if the drivers like it, which they will, we heard from Tony Stewart ourselves when he went around it. And of course, you remember the V8 guys were here with Kurt Busch. I think that COTA could well get into the chase. And at that point, you get huge TV numbers. And of course, it's all on. And I think it'd be great to have a bunch of ovals, a Roval, and a road course in the chase. And I hope it's COTA.
You bet. You know, Tony, we asked Tony about the 3.4 mile distance we've got here at COTA.
Tony Stewart.
That was too long, if it was not long, you know, if it was too long for the series. Because we saw the Aussie V8s go to the shorter course. And utilize.
I should never have done that.
I agree. Have you heard anything to push either direction? I'm pushing for the 3.4 miles.
I think it's absolutely going to be a 3.4, the 3.14 miles. It can't be any different. It would be a waste of time coming otherwise.
Yeah.
To be honest,
I don't think there's any doubt. I agree with you, Jonathan. I think it'd be silly. Hey, Les, speaking of NASCARs on COTA, wasn't there a couple of vintage NASCAR out there today?
Oh, yeah. Rusty Wallace.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, one of Rusty Wallace's Cup cars was there. Had the opportunity to see it a little bit. I couldn't get up close to it. I didn't want to get in the way of the mechanics. But like I said, that's just another thing I enjoy of this combination of the SVRA and Trans Am being together. You get a mix of personalities. I saw a couple of folks that were running in both series and things, and so that's great to have somebody in two different cars and the two different series. What do you what's the big takeaway? This is probably the biggest event that has come together for Trans Am and SVRA now that they're all in the family. What do you think, Jonathan?
I think that Tony Perella is going from strength to strength with what he's doing with combining SVRA with Trans Am. As you can imagine, we've also taken the step of, if you imagine Trans Am, we had a CBS contract to run Trans Am on the CBS Sports Network, but we're leaning towards now doing far more app and live streaming, and it's really worked this year. I mean, during the COVID pandemic, we've managed to somehow come out of the woods looking even better than we've ever looked. And Tony's mantra has to be, let's go live streaming, but let's do it well. And today we had live onboards, live drone shots from the Circuit of the Americas, four live onboards in the feature race in Trans Am.
Nice.
We had all the group racing for SVRA, all covered all day long. Around the world, we had people viewing in Japan, in Uruguay, in Mexico, in New Zealand. And I do really think it's the future. And I don't mean to be rude to any of the TV networks, but as you can imagine, historic racing doesn't really ignite a TV audience, or at least a TV network, to give it lots of time. And if they want, you'd have to buy on. Trans Am, different. People will watch Trans Am. But frankly, I think we're in a better capsulation to control our message and our advertising through live streaming. And we also use the latest technology with Live View with Greenlight Television. And I really do think it's the future. I've got a lot of time for what they're doing. And personally, I think it's going from strength to strength. They have just announced the 2021 schedule. And if you want to download either the SVRA app or the Trans Am app, you can see what we're doing. Go transam.com. But we've got something like 17 events next year, and we're going to all the iconic races, including going to the Roval at Charlotte. We're also going to Canada. And then there's the usual suspects like Laguna, COTA, Watkins Glen, Lime Rock, you name it. So I'm really excited. I feel like I'm right in the heart of American racing now, being part of this championship. And I'm delighted for Tony and John Claggett, who does the Trans Am Championship.
That's awesome. I think it is great that it's got this new
blood. Oh, and by the way,
yeah,
we're adding Formula 3 and Formula 4 next year.
Oh, my gosh, that's fantastic. All right, guys, hey, we got to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion about what happened at COTA. But we're going to talk some Formula 1 as well, because some things happened this week, including the announcement of a new race. You're listening to Speed City live from Austin, Texas. Back after a quick break.
When you're looking for traditional Tex-Mex, look no further than an Austin favorite, One in a Million. Serving original family recipes since 1980 and located just minutes from downtown at 2300 East Cesar Chavez, One in a Million has your Tex-Mex fix every day of the week from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Breakfast is served all day. Homemade migas, enchiladas, and menudo. And try the Don Juan taco. Some say it's big enough to feed a family of four. One in a Million. Online at oneinamillion.com.
Motivation USA, catering to the sport bike enthusiast looking for truly unique parts and accessories. Stand out from the crowd. Motivation is the exclusive North American distributor for SC Project MotoGP inspired exhausts and the largest Rizoma retailer in the United States. Get the best parts from around the world at the best prices with fast shipping and a knowledgeable staff ready to help. Shop online 24/7 at MotivationUSA.com. That's MotivationUSA.com.
Talk 1370.
Hi, this is Max Steppen, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, Max Verstappen bringing us back. We've got to talk some Formula One. Probably one of the biggest stories of the week for Formula One was the announcement of the new Saudi Arabia race that is coming at Qiddiya next year, and be a street race, but also a night race. And I want to talk to you about this, Jonathan. I want to start with you. I'm going to just enjoy the fact that we're going to have another night race, another new circuit, and not get into the politics and all that. I'm going to let you do that, Jonathan. I definitely want to talk about that just because. But, you know, motorsports has – how many years did we take the cigarette money in motorsports? And, you know, so there's definitely some negatives to this kind of stuff, but I'm just excited for a new race.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. We talked about this before the show, and I don't want – Formula One to go to Saudi Arabia personally. That's a political reason, because I think you've seen the news coming out, the human rights issues that Saudi Arabia has, and we all know the news. I don't need to get into it, but if you don't know, Saudi Arabia don't have a good human rights record, and therefore I don't think we should be advertising and spending our bucks going to places which don't necessarily follow the same ideals as us. Now, that is a very idealistic view. That said, I would love to go to another street race. And the truth is, I have been part of China, Malaysia, now Vietnam. And so I would be hypocritical to say that I haven't been back a big backer of the likes of Singapore, the likes of Malaysia, and the likes of China coming to Formula One and becoming household names as tracks. And the reason that Malaysia is probably the best example, people didn't know where Kuala Lumpur was, and Singapore to a certain extent. And since they've been on the Formula One calendar, they're a huge tourist destination. They're sophisticated cities with a lot of love, a lot of money. They make the rubber in Malaysia. They make Petronas oil, of course. And so they are a worthy partner. But I just feel that with Saudi Arabia, it might be a bridge too far. I used to go to Qatar for superbikes. And while it's a great track, I still never felt comfortable. There was no culture. There was nobody in the grandstands. They effectively paid for the event. I was never particularly comfortable being somewhere that wasn't a racing culture. And now the World Cup soccer is going to Qatar, and I don't really, have a lot of time for that either.
All right, well, so let me counterpoint that a little bit. I said I wasn't going to get into the politics, but I'm going to because think about what's all this all of a sudden now. This is the discussion. And if there is discussion about it, that's the way you solve a problem. because now we're all talking about it. It's just raising the awareness of the problem itself. So maybe I'm going to take the path. Imagine that, Jonathan, the glass half full.
Unbelievable.
I'm going to take the perspective that this is going to be a good thing for that it could help the problem. How about that?
Well, and to be fair, Saudi Arabia are doing tennis tournaments, golf tournaments, and
Formula E.
Hard. They've got a lot of money, Formula E. They are trying to bring themselves into the 21st century. And by hook or by crook, and certainly by money, they're doing that. They have a very modern city and cities there. But you're right. Maybe this is what is the catalyst to change things. And I mean, you know, let's try to keep out of the politics a little bit. Lewis Hamilton was asked about it, and he again said the right thing, which was he didn't know enough about the problems or the outrage of going to Saudi Arabia. There was outrage when they went to Bahrain, I may add.
Sure.
So, you know, and we're still, you know, that's still been a part, and we'll be going to Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates as well. And Qatar is still very much, you know, a track. Listen, where motor racing grows, the sport is growing, and we want motor racing to be loved by everyone in the world and it to be proliferated around the world. So in that respect, in a sort of cathartic way, I'd like to see motorsport on every corner of the planet. But, you know, it depends. It depends why they're doing it. If you want my down and dirty reason why they're going to Saudi Arabia, is that Saudi Arabia will pay a lot for that street race, and they've lost a lot of money this year because of COVID. That's business, folks.
Yeah, there's nothing. It's very clear why they're doing it. It's for money. And look, that's their job. They've got to keep the sport going.
It's a public company.
But yeah,
they got to make money.
That's right. But they also, if you assume, you know, I've taught Formula One, Chase Carey and all the guys have talked publicly about the positive things. You know, we races won and all the other things they've talked about this year. I feel certain they're going to take a little bit of the spin that I just talked about in some way and really truly try to make a positive from these kinds of things like that. So,
and by the way, the Middle East and Middle East money has had an influence on motor racing since the year dot. So go look at Alan Jones's 1982 winning car for Williams in the World Championship. I mean, you know, the sponsorship, you know, look at Abu Dhabi with the Ferrari world now. The influence of the Middle East is growing by the day. And, you know, you can sit and look at and not be progressive and not be open and say, we're not going there because you're not like us. Well, that doesn't really work in today's 21st century. So I think, you know, I am putting forward an old school, view at first, but I'm also willing to open up both sides of the debate and say, okay, you're right, John, the glass half full is the way to go. Let's give it a chance. If there is some backlash, if there is some negativity towards that race or even physically being there with the fans and Formula One, then it should be reconsidered. But if it goes off well and it's a successful event, and I certainly think that in terms of investment, a street race there would be both unique. I mean, Baku, look at how successful that's been. Nobody thought that was possible. Why would we go there? Vietnam, why on earth would we go there? Well, we're going, and I think it'll be a huge success. And in Vietnam's case, I think it's really important that they put themselves on the map. I've been to Vietnam. I've done a sports event there. I did a marathon there. And it's a beautiful country. And it is much maligned because of the Great War that was there back in the 70s. That's how it's known. And it shouldn't be, because that was a long, long time ago. And Vietnam is open to the world. And I think races like Formula One going there shows it.
What,
so
what was your time in the marathon?
I'll echo what John said in that I hope that there are issues. This puts a magnifying glass on it and helps address the civil rights issues. But Jonathan, you just blew through and you put out a really important statement there that I got to raise issue with. You said you went somewhere and you did a marathon. You ran 26 miles?
That's what I said. What was his time?
Well, what I say, I did a marathon.
He said it. He said he did a marathon.
I covered a marathon.
Oh, you covered a marathon. Okay.
I just clarification.
Two documentaries in Vietnam, one in Hanoi and one in Ho Chi Minh.
I liked how you just blew by that.
No, I didn't race them. You wouldn't see me racing 26 miles. Come on. The fridge is about the closest I get to a race. I'm quick getting there, I can tell you.
Hey, I want to come back to the United States for a minute. Les, you got a story in here about Miami. What's going on? Is Miami not dead?
Miami is not dead. It is absolutely not dead. Chase Carey is still actively working with the crew in Miami. They are looking at it. Obviously, things have kind of stalled for this year in many aspects.
Yeah.
But Miami is absolutely still interested in getting it done. Certainly, they'll have to deal with the neighborhood issues that they've got. But that's a good thing. Now, somebody else raised an issue last week. I went out and did that bicycle event a week and change ago. And somebody brought up, well, whatever came of Miami, and furthermore, what's come of the captain owning Indy Motor Speedway now? He has mentioned he's willing to get back into the F1 world. Are we going to create a situation? There's too much competition in the U.S. that can afford a Formula One race?
I don't think so. Yeah. I think, you know, right from the get-go, Liberty Media said we want three races in the United States. That's our wish. They expected them to be street races because that, at the time, was the best possibility. But now I think there's a possibility of having three races, one at COTA, obviously. That's the only FIA Formula One spec circuit, and it's a fantastic home for the U.S. Grand Prix, and it should remain so. Miami would be a fantastic street race, and think about the seven-hour flight from Europe, easy contact yeah. with all the fans, let alone the American fans. And I think that, like you say, Roger Penske is now very much in the picture with owning IMS, and I think a chance to go back to the Indy road course, and as they have done in Indy, make it a success. That course is a great course. And of course, it's a great venue, and they love their motorsport. It doesn't matter whether it's Indy, NASCAR, or bike racing. I was at a bike race for Moto America there a few weeks ago. And, you know, any form of motorsport in Indianapolis is popular. So I can see all three races getting made.
And I'll counter a little bit. Before Penske entered the arena, entered IMS as the owner, I was all for a Miami race. But now, if we've got the opportunity to have Formula One at Indy, I don't want another race any closer than we are to Indy, just for the sake of the sport, not the selfish reason I don't want to dilute what's going on at COTA. I want to see a West Coast. Well, wait a minute. If we're going to have Indy, let's have something a little more central. Let's call it us. And then let's go to the West Coast, to LA, San Diego area for a West Coast. Geographically, that'll disperse the fans across the country. And from a calendar sequential event, I don't want either one of those coming immediately before or after the other. As we used to talk about Canada to the U.S. and Mexico and Brazil, when we talked about those and then potentially throwing in Miami, I didn't want Austin and Miami against each other. I'd prefer it to be like Canada and Austin, and then the later half of the year, let's do Miami and head to Mexico after that.
Yeah, it would make sense to have, because the June date in Montreal has been almost in stone for 30 years now. It's June 11th. I can tell you exactly when the date is. It's been in stone, and it's a great event. But it makes more sense for me to see the following race being Indianapolis at the end of June, let's say, before going back to Europe for and Liberty are more geographically minded when it comes to the calendar. And I think, because at the moment it's Canada and back to Britain for the July event. And I think there is room for that June 11th event for Montreal, and then haul it down, as it were, by road down to Indianapolis. And that makes sense. And then, you know, then go back to Europe for another round of the European side of it. And that would therefore not come into any sort of factor when it comes to, I think, our Mexico, Brazil, COTA sort of triumphant will remain the most geographically sensical way of doing the sort of southern part of the Americas for us.
You know, you're right.
Yeah.
You'd obviously save some travel logistics, you know, going from Canada to Indy and potentially doing something else there. I think that's a good call to have those paired up, and then later in the season have Austin and Mexico, even though I still would like to see Austin and Mexico not be sequential races.
Or at least 2 weeks between them.
Yeah. I mean, look, it would be great if we could space them out exactly the way we wanted and all that. But we really have to kind of see how it plays out because, yeah, logistically, it makes a lot more sense for them to travel that way. But, hey, guys, let's shift gears because I want to talk about this story that I saw on motorsport.com from Adam Cooper talking about Honda's withdrawal from the sport. And Chase Carey, Formula One CEO Chase Carey, said that Honda's withdrawal, and this is his opinion, he said that Honda's withdrawal from the sport was driven by economics, and he remains optimistic that the 2026 engine rules will appeal to different manufacturers. And in this article, he talked about how VW was enthusiastic about that. He said, I don't know if you saw the quote coming a couple months ago from the CEO of Volkswagen. They couldn't have been more positive about what we're doing and the importance of us as Formula One, as a platform. So, I mean, we all knew that I don't know why Honda came out and said that, you know, that they're changing their strategy in motorsports and then they immediately came out and said Indy was going to be a focus for them. But I think we all knew it was economic. But
To be fair, though, Indy is a lot cheaper in terms of developing engines than Formula One.
Well, yeah, and absolutely, no doubt. But I do love the fact that Carey is talking about other manufacturers in 2026 and, you know, budget caps and everything. And I was talking to my son today, and he mentioned that Porsche had developed, you know, remember where there's rumor about Porsche coming into Formula One as a powertrain manufacturer, and they talked about they had developed a motor. And he was saying that they had gone pretty far with that and that it was a motor that a power unit, I should say, that was developed from the 919 WEC car. I mean, it was, as you know, instead of a V8 hybrid, it was a V6 hybrid. And so, I mean, look, this would be the dream. And right now with Honda, if they do stay out, which I'm assuming they're going to, we're going to need some more manufacturers.
Absolutely. The Porsche involvement started, as far as the powertrain and the power unit discussion, started about 3 years as they started doing their next 5 year kind of trend looking at the powertrains for those. Honda was someone not currently involved in Formula One. They were somebody highly respected and very advanced in technology, as said, the 919 that we saw. That is why they were brought in. The 919 was dominant in everything it went to, and it exhibited a lot of the technology that the Formula One group wants to go to. By including Porsche so heavily in that, it did not necessarily be influenced by a current power unit provider to Formula One. So it is a little bit of disconnected party there, giving them the expertise and what they've learned and where they could go with it. So that was, as I understand, a big part of Porsche being involved in that.
Yeah, and just another point on Honda, I think, and I heard Christian Horner say this on the Sky coverage the other week, which is, he was asked, you know, what are your options? And he said, well, the obvious option is for us to become, to run our own Honda engines and develop the Honda engines and effectively, continue the program, but not under Honda's auspices as a company, but take a team of people that would develop effectively a customer product, which without actually being Honda Motorsport. Honda are involved in so much motorsport, and I could, you know, with a big company wielding like that, they've got to go with what they think is the best thing for them. They've plumped for Indy at the moment, for sure. They're heavily involved in TCR. They're heavily involved in lots of different other motorsports, and of course, heavily involved in bike racing in terms of their motorcycle program. So Honda's a massive company and sells a lot of cars, especially here in the States. So I was befuddled a little bit by the announcement, but not by the fact that Honda themselves were going to pull out because of the money spent. They're frugal at best. The Japanese always are. They don't like to spend a lot of money. That was the problem for Toyota when they came into Formula One. They didn't realize just what it takes to be at the sharp end, I think, and therefore their entry into Formula One was not a success, unfortunately. Honda have had much more success over the years, and I just think that both Formula One's options and, to a certain extent, Red Bull's options are best to try to keep Honda, or at least that engine, involved in Formula One, because it's now a very, very good engine, and maybe they do some sort of deal where They lease those Honda engines from Honda and maybe even take some expertise from Japan to run the engines and run the program. But I don't think they want to be all... I mean, you look at the record they've had with McLaren and Red Bull in the last few years. It's finally come good, but they've had to put up with a lot of backlash and bad press by being involved in Formula One. So when you look at the balance of sort of the last decade for Honda in Formula One, it's not been a good program.
Yeah, and there's that is more than just a rumor. I mean, I think I even saw Christian Horner mention that that was being discussed. But hey, guys, we got to take a break. And when we come back, first thing we're going to talk about is MotoGP coming back to COTA. The provisional calendar for next year has been released, and we'll talk about that. So you're listening to Speed City. We're live in Austin, Texas, back after a quick break. Miami, the city that keeps the roof blazing. Party in the city where the heat is on, all night on the beach till the break of dawn. Welcome to my room, bienvenido a Miami. Bouncing in the club where the heat is on, all night on the beach till the break of dawn. I'm going to Miami.
Winding Road Racing is your first and best choice for all the essentials for a great weekend at the track. We're racers and we love helping racers. With a full selection of racing gear in stock, get geared up with all the safety equipment needed to meet all the latest Snell, FIA, and SFI regulations. Outfit your car with a comprehensive lineup of racing necessities, and when you need to find a few more tents, turn to data acquisition systems from AIM Sports, V-Box, and others. Austin-based with shops in California, Georgia, and Kentucky, the source for all your racing needs. Winding Road Racing. WindingRoadRacing.com.
As a rider, you know what you like. The power, the feel, the ride. When it comes to gear, you know what keeps you safe. Ducati Austin provides riders with the finest in day and easy leathers. The best the market offers. Visit Ducati Austin on Breaker Lane just east of I-35 and throw your leg over the most iconic sports bike ever built.
Ducati.
Even take it for a test ride. Or see what's been described as art on wheels from MV Agusta. You know what you like. See it at Ducati Austin. Online at DucatiAustin.com.
Talk 1370, the right choice.
Hello, I'm Jenny Gow from BBC F1. You are listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, welcome back. We did spend the day today at Circuit of the Americas for Trans Am, SVRA, and all the fun, but we got some news this week about Circuit of the Americas for 2021, and the MotoGP provisional calendar was released, and Circuit of the Americas is back in its normal slot for April 18th, third on the calendar behind Qatar and Argentina, and that is a tradition that I'm very happy to hear is continued. Not that I doubted it was coming back. It was never in jeopardy, wouldn't you think, Jonathan?
No, it's a hugely popular event, and the MotoGP guys love coming here. And I think it's ironic that while Marc Marquez has been a little poorly after his break at Jerez, his brother is now up to speed in MotoGP. So come April, get your tickets, because both Marquez brothers will go head-to-head to see who's king of COTA.
Will they get to see Valentino Rossi next year? He's been in the news, too.
Yes, I think they will.
I think so, too. And Valentino...
Les says no.
No, I just said, oh...
Yeah, you're thinking about his why he was in his COVID test, right?
Yeah, he is. He's come back, hit him pretty hard, it sounded like, and so he was away for a bit. I was really hoping, with Marquez out for so long of this season, that we'd have a chance to see Valentino get his number 10.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But it wasn't to be. By the way, guess who was here's a good story for you. Guess who was going to replace Rossi if he didn't get his COVID test back negative?
Kimi Räikkönen.
Garrett Gerloff from Houston, Texas.
Right. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Spring, Texas, Garrett Gerloff. How about that?
Fantastic. I like that idea. Hey, Jonathan, I want to talk about a story. Tell everybody, first of all, where this story comes from, the website where you write an article, what, about once a month or so?
Yep. I write for Talk Motorsport in New Zealand, and I do opinion pieces. And I did a recent opinion piece on Scott Dixon, the great Scott, as it were, and Scott McLaughlin, because both of them racing in the final race of the Indy Championship at St. Petersburg. But while Scott McLaughlin is just starting his Indy career, obviously Scott Dixon is not—he's not at the end of his career, but he is literally now in rarefied air. It's only AJ Foyt that's got more titles than him, or you know, in terms of victories, Scott Dixon has got 90, and Mario Andretti has got 92. And then AJ Foyt has got the most. So Scott Dixon is about to become a GOAT for sure, because he's just 40. He's still going strong. He's still winning. He won the title again this year, and really excited for that. But what the other side of the story, which I mentioned in the article, is the fact that how cool is it going to be next year? We mentioned Jimmy at the top. Jimmy Johnson is going to be Scott Dixon's teammate, 7-time NASCAR champion, 6-time IndyCar champion, together, working together. Awesome.
And like you were saying earlier, Les, old guys rule.
They do.
Guys rule.
Yeah, two 40-year-olds on the same IndyCar team. That, I mean, Jonathan, what you're saying about Dixon, you kind of forget because he's, you know, he's still obviously crazy competitive and doing so great. But he is just on that precipice of being the greatest of all time. About
greatest of all time, yeah.
You know,
and it's incredible. He's been, you know, he's been racing in America most of his adult life. He came over here as a youngster, did Formula Ford in New Zealand, and then came over, and he's been with Chip Ganassi ever since. And that's the other thing that's really cool. It's been an amazing partnership. He's won. I mean, think about this. This year alone, he won the Rolex 24 Hours, he won Petit Le Mans, and he won the IndyCar Series.
Yeah, at 40.
At 40. Not bad.
Not bad. Valentino Rossi could appreciate that.
Yeah. Oldies are goodies.
Speaking of old guys, we got. Well, we are coming up on the running out of time. Let's see. We've covered Formula One. We've covered MotoGP, IndyCar, NASCAR, Trans Am, SVRA. What else have we not covered?
How about let's talk turkeys, because it's turkey next weekend.
It's next weekend. Okay. I think we've covered every story that I've got in here. Oh, there is one more real quick. Next weekend, we've got Turkish for Grand Prix, like Jonathan's talking about, for Formula One. But the next weekend after that is in Bahrain. And then they follow it up with a doubleheader, which is the short course in Bahrain. So, yeah, next weekend, we're going to be back on the air doing our Formula One pre- and post-race shows very early. I haven't even looked at the clock. I don't know if the producers looked at the clock. I don't even know. It's going to be...
Oh, he'll be on it.
Yeah, he'll be on it. It's probably a 7 a.m. start for us. You can go to speedcitybroadcast.com to see. Oh, my God. He just said 4 a.m. in my ear.
What?
Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I think I've got a wedding or a bar mitzvah or a haircut that day.
Yeah, but we do, as you know, if you're a fan of Speed City, we do the Formula One pre- and post-race show surrounding the BBC play-by-play. So go to our website to check out where to hear that on national radio. But thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and we'll be back, of course, next Sunday night. You can hear a show. It's either a replay of our Formula One show or a live show every Sunday night. So thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next week.
Ciao, y'all.
Happy trails.
What up, y'all? It's your boy, Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host, Harrison Sanford, on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.